ebook publishers and marketing services company, Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, your favorite fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes, PRX, and right here locally on KSKQ 89.5 FM, Ashland, Oregon, art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $9.99 per month. And be sure to check out our new book rental program. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, we meet Billy David of the Billy David Band in San Diego, California. We continue our conversations with Grammy winner Joanne Shenandoah and New York Times bestseller Paper Towns and our Downpour.com special feature right after the news you want to know.
Hello, I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
Hi, I'm Sean Mark Nipper.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. The late 60s was when Star Trek was introduced and sci-fi really, you know, there had been some stuff before, but Star Trek really kind of cemented it in the public consciousness. You know, it only ran for, what, 2.5 seasons, and yet it's still going strong. In fact, the 50th anniversary of the franchise is coming up here pretty soon. I think 2018 will be the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. And one thing that's been kind of ping-ponging around Hollywood recently is Michael Dorn, who played Worf on the Next Generation and also DS9 and then the Next Generation movies, has been giving some interviews with the Cinema Source and kind of hinting that there might be a Captain Worf TV show. He's been really pushing for it. He's got a whole process.
Well, is that now Worf now? What character does he play?
Michael Dorn plays Worf, the Klingon.
He's a Klingon. Okay.
Security director on the Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
And then when Next Generation ended in 1994, like a year or two later, he joined the cast of Deep Space Nine, and he played the same character. And then he also played the same character in the movies. The thing that he's thrown out there is that it'll take place before the final Next Generation movie, Nemesis, but after the events of Deep Space Nine. So kind of in that little window there. You know, there is a Star Trek 3 coming. Being called Star Trek Beyond or Star Trek 3, they haven't really released what the actual title is. Simon Pegg, you know, who plays Scotty in the new Star Trek reboot, is also one of the co-stars. He's also one of the screenwriters. There's been a lot of revisions going on. They've revised the script several times. Roberto Orci was dropped. He was the one who directed the previous one, and the new one's going to be helmed by Justin Lin, who directed several of the Fast and Furious movies. So there's a lot going on in the Star Trek universe. I personally hope this happens.
I think it's a great idea.
Well, Jerry, why don't you tell us how you really feel about it?
You want me to not hold back? Is that what you want? Yeah. I would love it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Speaking of opening up new opportunities, Maya's got a story here, and you know, and
I bet she's
when I first saw it, you know, I was like, yes, now this is what something I want to see this when it comes out when they make this movie, yeah. You know.
Well, first you can read the book too. Okay.
Nobody said anything about it. You had to know how to read, you know.
You
know?
You might remember that a couple episodes ago, maybe it was more than that, we ended up talking about the movie that was released of 50 Shades of Grey. Well, there has been a new announcement because it's been actually probably a fantasy for millions of women across the world. Christian Grey, the hero of best-selling erotic novels, 50 Shades of Grey, is getting his own sequel. Author E.L. James, she delighted fans by announcing that she's publishing a new version of the, you know, sexually explicit kind of book series from the point of view of the tormented tycoon, Christian Grey, not the shy young object of his desires, Anastasia Steele, because the trilogy is told from her perspective. Ooh. Yeah. She explained that Christian is a complex character and readers have always been fascinated by his desires, but that we've never really known his perspective, and there are always two sides to the story. James says that she's dedicated the book to the thousands of readers who asked and asked and asked for this. Something interesting is that after she made the announcement on her Facebook page, it clocked up to more than 143,000 likes and shares within the first, like within hours.
Wow.
They were, yeah. You know, fans are just tripping up with excitement. So it should be interesting to see what she deals us with that book.
No, you know, I think that's great that they're like, you know, because like, you know, one, the trilogy was such a huge phenomenal and it came, you know, success, came out of nowhere. The author came out of nowhere. You know, they made the movie, and you know, it was a really good movie. And now you get to see it from the other side, you know?
I'm curious. It'll be interesting.
I'm curious to see what the women's reaction is going
to
be.
I'm curious to see if Maya pulls a playlist together based on the Grey side of the story. Hear what music comes out of that.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be sexy, whatever it is.
And you know, the craziest thing to think about is this all started as fan fiction.
It was major. The interesting thing about E.L. James, I think something that makes a real difference in her success is she has a total relationship with her fans. She stays in communication with them, and she's expressed that they're the motivating force in terms of her decisions of what she does with the material. So it makes sense that, of course, with lots of people begging her to make this sequel from Christian Grey's. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Charlie was just like kept sending her texts and emails. It's like, come on, please, I need it from Christian. So she's like, okay, finally. Okay, Charlie, I'll give it to you.
All right. You know what? And that is the line I want to hear her say, but you know, let me tell you something. You know, here's this, this is just like a, you know, off the wall thing. She's a British writer, you know, she's not American. And then, you know, the woman that wrote J.K. Rowling, she wrote, you know, Harry Potter. She's a British writer.
Yep.
And both of them were unknown, and both of them just like, you know, just rocked the world, not just, you know, the United States. I mean, the whole world. You know, and I think that's you know,
what's in the water over there. Yeah, man.
I don't know.
Speaking of rocking the world, rocking the free world even. Well, don't expect to see Neil Young with a Frappuccino in his hand anytime soon.
What?
Yeah, Young and the Promise of Real have released the full music video for their new song, Rockstar Bucks a Coffee Shop. And it's in it that they mock Starbucks, Monsanto, and genetically modified organism. Neil Young plans an album and tour with Willie Nelson's son, one of whom which played here in Ashland.
Yeah, he played at Jacksonville Springs. And you know what? I love this, you know, Rockstar Bucks a Coffee Shop is the name of the title, right? But we got to give our listeners a taste of this song so they can hear what it sounds like. So let's hear a little bit of it.
We'll play the master.
Share the experience.
We start with
running order.
Rock Starbucks?
Yeah.
Crank it up.
If you don't like a rock Starbucks a coffee shop, you better change your station, 'cause that ain't all that we got. Yeah, I want a cup of coffee, but I don't want a GMO. I like to start my day off without helping Monsanto.
We'll kick off their tour.
Let's go see them.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Rock on.
Something that I like is that for issues that are really serious like that, there can be a great way of spreading the word on it and making people think about it when it's not portrayed in such a diehard, like, serious manner, but there's humor, or there's a kind of fun way of, yeah, let's think about these issues. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Times are a-changing.
And
technology, too.
I read a story on cars running on salt water yesterday morning in the news.
Mm.
And I kind of wonder if that's ahead in that direction for planes, too. Could we be running planes on salt water, or maybe something else?
Yeah, well, you could be running planes on solar power. Mm-hmm. You know, it's happening right now as we speak. The Solar Impulse 2 took off from Nanjing Lukao International Airport in Nanjing, eastern China's Jiangsu province, you know, just a little bit ago. And it's on its way to Hawaii on a scheduled 6-day, 6-night nonstop flight. This is the longest and most dangerous challenge in its attempt to circumnavigate the globe using no fuel. And that's the key here. No, absolutely no fuel. No gas, no nothing. Just solar power from the sun.
So no fuel?
No fuel.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Wait, but how about fuel? No fuel.
No fuel. No fuel.
No Starbucks either?
No Starbucks. No coffee.
Just like the plane in Illusions by Richard Bach.
Pretty long. You're not fueling me, are you? I mean,
Stop fueling around.
Yeah, stop fueling around. I mean, you know, 6 days, six nights, but they're also going 8,175 kilometers or 5,079 miles, you know, from Nanjing to Hawaii. So this is, you know, it's a pretty long flight. You know, it's going to take a long time. They're not going to use any fuel, though. So
that's courageous. Yeah. Maybe they're in the Mile High Club.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they will be by the end of the flight.
Wow. This is a great thing, you know, all jokes aside, you know, to be able to use solar power, you know, you're talking about seawater, you know, there's hemp too. People, you know, they're talking about hemp fuel, you know, there's a lot of things out there that we can use to, you know, eliminate our dependency on fossil fuel. And
on a serious note, like you were saying, what I think, you know, is like, one, it's a great idea, you know, and people have been talking about it for a long time, you know, converting salt water over, you know, to drinkable water, you know, and they've accomplished that, you know, they could do that. And now with a solar plane, you know, eventually they'll develop it to where, you know, you know, they'll be able to fly like that, you know, depending on the weather patterns and things like that. And you know, with the, you know, the hemp seeds, you know, all the other things, I think we just came to the point where as a society, and I mean society, not just Americans, you know, all around this great big world of ours, you know, where people are saying like, okay, you know, we've done this for, you know, 1,000 years. Now let's try this, you know, and, you know, we get more educated and we find out there's other things that we can use that were always there and they were always available. Because, you know, people give, you know, oil, like, you know, it's a terrible name, you know, because it causes pollution and all that stuff. But it also is a natural resource. You know, we don't make oil. It comes out of the ground. You know, and so we find alternative things. And I think that's great, you know, that we had the foresight. And I like what Joanne says when she says, you know, in their native culture, what they think is that when you pass away, you know, that you go into the cosmos and up into the moons. And are reunited with everybody. And it's not what you did in your lifetime. It's what you did to help the next 7 generations. Yeah. And that's yeah. That was her thought on that. But back on the solo flight, you know, like you said, they're just going to be flying. And I don't think they're going to have Netflix.
Well, I was going to say, you know, solar power flight is great. And turning salt water into drinkable water, that's great. But I think the obvious pinnacle that we've reached the technological, you know, revolution is the existence of Netflix. I mean, let's face it, right? Solar flight's great, and drinking water, yeah, I guess we all need that. But what I need more than water is Netflix, right? I mean, so, but, you know, there's been some rumblings. We've talked about it on this show a couple of months ago, too, and now it's looking like it might be a reality. Netflix is experimenting with dun 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 ads.
Oh man.
Yes. Now, so far, before you get too upset, so far, all it has been is in a few select markets, a few select customers are seeing ads for other shows on Netflix. So they're advertising their own stuff, like Orange is the New Black season, whatever, coming up. You know, it hasn't been that bad so far. But it is a test. It's a kind of a chance. And, you know, I think that if it's just going to be that, I think people are going to be okay with it. If they're just like advertising, you know, coming soon to Netflix, this, you know, because you're already using that service. If they start advertising for third parties, I think that's going to be a huge issue, especially if they want to increase the price. Like, you know, $2 more, you cannot see ads. I think you're going to see a huge uproar because they have a very loyal user base, but they like it just the way it is. And Netflix, I think just a few months ago said, we're never going to have ads. So I find this kind of odd.
Well, you know what? I have Netflix, like, you know, probably a lot of other people do too. And they're great, you know, because they don't have, you know, the commercials. There's a couple things that Netflix doesn't do, like on Amazon, right? For example, you can watch a trailer of any movie on Amazon for free, you know, to see if you're going to like it. Now, Netflix used to do that, but they don't do that anymore because they said it cost them too much money and they would have to raise the price. You know, they used to also do the DVD service. Now, they still will if you want to pay them the money.
Right.
Right. But most people have to stream everything. But this idea about them doing commercials, I think, is that, you know, they're going to do it, and I think, you know, Jerry's right that they will just advertise their own stuff because they're going so heavily. Adam Sandler has a new movie coming out on Netflix. He was just on Jimmy Fallon last night talking about it. You know, they make their own the television shows. They make their own movies. You know, they're you know, going original content and that kind of thing. So that would be cool. But if they go the way of Hulu, where, you know, you watch the movie and then you get a 15-second or a 20-second commercial
every 10 minutes,
you know, on you know potato chips or something like that. That to me,
ruffle feathers.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah. That's yeah, that would bother me, and I think that's why Netflix is so successful, because they don't do that.
Yeah,
you know, and I think they will advertise, being first in the market and doing this type of thing. You know, at some point, you know, you got to make some money back.
Yeah.
Like, they only charge $7.99 for a month. They don't care if 20 people at once use it on your account, you know?
Yeah.
They're still making a good profit.
They're making a good profit, but, you know, like, you know, I'll give you an example. Their stock is like $647 a share.
Right.
Right? And their P&E, which is, you know, their, you know,
profits and earnings.
Profits and earnings is like 192. So they're like, you know, 192 times over what they actually make.
Right.
So the stock's really, you know, not worth that much value.
Right.
That's what they're looking at. And there's, and like, if I'm watching a movie on Netflix, like, you know, whatever it is, you know, something like 50 Shades Grey, and, you know, I see a thing about, hey, the, you know, there's going to be a new book out for 50 Shades Grey, you know, and then Netflix is going to develop the movie, you know, I'm cool with that.
Right.
You know, and then, you know,
if it's related.
Right. And then, and then another thing that they do is, speaking of related, is that, you know, they have a thing for kids, right? And when you go on there, it's like Netflix for kids. Right? And then and it says right on there, you know, who's watching, you know? And, you know, you can just go to your own little account. And so I think they'll be fine. And I think they will develop commercials, but I don't think it'll be third party.
You don't think they'll go the Hulu route then, essentially?
No.
You know, and that's when, you know... It's speculative that there's profit potential, you know, and if Netflix could make a huge profit if they just started doing third-party ads, but they might lose that user base and then eventually not make a profit. You see what I'm saying? It's a delicate balance because you want people there. You want those eyeballs. Netflix is just at that point where they have to start, like, you know, deciding what are we going to do.
I think they're in the beginning stages where, okay, let's try it with this our stuff, see if it
experiments.
Works. You know, and a company that does make a lot of money is Facebook. There's two big differences. You know, it's like when you see ads on Facebook, you know, you don't have to read them. You can click off on them. You can say, don't ever put that on my page again. And they don't automatically come on. You know, you only engage in that ad if you want to. You know, plus their service is free.
Right.
You know, so they're not charging you to be on there.
Here's one way that I'll be okay with the ads on Netflix is if they put them in the beginning of the show. And then that's it. So I'll watch a 2-minute video.
Or the very end.
Of your thing. Yeah, beginning or the end, but don't interrupt my show unless I'm watching 24. Because you actually have to interrupt that because the chronological gate is messed up. If you watch a 45-minute. Yeah, as long as they don't interrupt the show, I'll be okay with some of the ads. And as long as they're good, produce fine. You know, I mean, it's a fine balance of like shoot movies and I shoot commercials.
Just don't
be
Hulu. That's all we're asking. Yeah.
Well,
don't
you know
be
what?
Hulu.
That's cool. You know, if you would, you know, be acquiescence to that. I wouldn't. You know, and the reason why is because like YouTube does that.
Yeah.
You know, and if I want to watch, you know, if you want to see how popular you are on YouTube, you click on a video, like say, like by the Pretty Reckless or Rolling Stones or somebody like that. they're going to make you watch 30-second commercial before that video comes on.
Yeah.
And if you're popular enough, people will sit through that 30 seconds and watch it. If you're not that popular, but you are popular, you have to watch the first 5 seconds, and then the video will come on.
Yeah.
You know? And if you're not a big name, then it will just come on right away.
Right.
Well, yeah, I think that's the reason why YouTube, which also shows movies, you know, it turns people off. They're like, hey, I want to see this new, you know, Maya video. And I click on it, and I'm like, oh, I got to watch 30 seconds, you know, of, you know, Hawaiian Punch, you know.
Right. You know? But, yeah, there is something to be said for watching a 30-second commercial before you can watch a 4-minute video versus watching a 30-second commercial before you can watch an hour-long program. And I think that's what frustrates me the most about YouTube is exactly that. It's like, if I'm popping in there to see a minute-and-a-half video of someone getting, you know, kicked in the nards, I don't think it's fair to make me spend, you know, one-third of that time watching an ad as well. You know,
well, what you know
saying?
What? You just give me an idea, man. Here's the thing, you know, is like HBO does this.
Yeah,
I think this is what Netflix is looking for, because when you watch HBO, they don't have commercials, right?
Right.
But in between the shows, they'll show you clips from other shows and other things that are coming on.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's maybe where they're going.
I think
going.
That's the route Netflix will go.
What do you think,
well,
Maya?
And being a computer nerd, I always have like a bunch of windows open on different screens anyway. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's like, okay, 30 seconds, mute and do something else.
I know, me
thing,
too.
And do something else. It's like, why would I have to sit there and actually be my eyes glued to the commercial?
No, you mean you could do that?
It makes me go.
Are you going to upgrade to Windows 10?
Well, these days when you go to the movies, you get, you know, 25 minutes of trailers and Coca-Cola commercials and this and that. So, I mean, how much I pay $13 to go see a three-dimensional movie and I get bombarded. So I could actually go wash my car and have lunch and then come back and catch the beginning of the film. So,
yeah, just show up late.
This is going to keep happening. You know, I mean, yeah, like you said, YouTube and then, you know, Netflix and ESPN. I mean, you go on ESPN, they have these ads that pop up now while you're reading or whatever, and then just the other day, the one SoundCloud, like I'd never saw an ad on SoundCloud, and I'm listening to music on SoundCloud, and bam, it's like a Frappuccino ad from Starbucks. You know, they don't even give you the 5 seconds and skip.
But
you got to sit there and listen to the whole 15 seconds.
This is how it works. This is that delicate dance. You know, when YouTube first started, no ads. And then when they got to a certain amount of people, a certain user base, then the ads started showing up. You know, and it's all, again, it's about they want to get the eyeballs there. They want to keep them there, but they also want to monetize. So how much can they put?
Well, you know what? It is that bad. And what I'm saying, man, is, you know what?
We're not going to take it.
No, listen to me, Repro. It is that bad, and all I want to do is go on a summer vacation now.
No, that's what I'm going to say.
Tell me about a summer vacation.
Maybe this summer, instead of locking yourself in your room with Netflix, you should go do something.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I don't want, you know what? It's like, dude, I don't want to plan the party. I want to be in the party.
You are the party.
Yeah, you know?
So not all websites take this tactic of trying to have full monopoly on the money, because there are some that are empowering people to make money for themselves.
Yeah.
Nice. And there are some really fun ways of planning your vacation this summer based on websites that give you free resources, such as home exchanges, house sitting, and free or nearly free car and RV rentals. So I was curious about this. Very interesting. Have you ever heard of homeexchange.com?
I have heard of them.
Have you? Because I hadn't heard of them. So interesting. It started out primarily as a way for teachers on sabbatical to trade homes with each other and travel on the cheap. But then the company expanded, and it now has like 65,000 listings.
Wow.
Here's how it works. You list your home, including photos, and details about yourself and what you're looking for. And then you sit back and wait for people to contact you, or you can reach out to other people whose homes are located in places you're interested in going to. You simply do an exchange. You know, you go somewhere and they get to your home. So it's really cool. Basically, the more tourists that your hometown attracts, the more inquiries you're going to get. There's no cost to exchange the homes, but there's a $150 yearly subscription fee. So.
I bet you make really good friends doing that too. You meet people from all over and you start to communicate with them, and then you have these friends.
And buddies from all over the world.
How cool.
Sounds really cool, doesn't it?
I'd give that a shot.
Yeah, me too. There's also one, pet sitting, because I've heard of plenty of situations where people have beloved pets. They're going to go on a vacation. They don't want to have their pets sit in the the kennel for the whole time that they're gone. So there is something that's really popular in Europe, and it's actually gaining attraction here in the United States. It's called trustedhousesitter.com. And it gives pet lovers the opportunity to pet and house sit while the pet owners travel. People know that the pets are going to be happier at home. And the sitter gets to travel to a new place and have free accommodations for the duration of the trip because they come take care of the animals. So, for example, if you wanted to go to a home in Bali with a swimming pool who needs a dog sitter, you know, go for 2 weeks and there you go. Good deal. So I don't know. If you're anyone here, you know, feel like they love animals and you feel like you want to travel. It's also for rental cars because there is a site that called Transfer Car. And the site explains that oftentimes vehicles need to get back to their home cities. So there's a really cheap way here for rental car companies to make that happen, where people are able to go ahead and get the cars and they take it back to the destination and they get it for free.
Yeah. I find it just fascinating.
It was an amazing interview the other day. I believe it was the CEO of Cisco, and he was talking about, you know, the new digital age that we're living in. So you got like Uber and you got, you know, the house sitting people and you got, you know, Airbnb and like all this stuff. And it just creates a community. It creates business opportunity. Another interesting thing he was saying is that, you know, to survive in this new computer internet age, you have to be able to disrupt or be disrupted as a business.
Interesting.
What do you mean?
Either have to disrupt like an existing industry, or as the player in that industry, you have to be able to survive people disrupting you.
Yeah.
You know, I would interpret that as you have to adapt. You know, and embrace, you know, the new technologies as things come along. You know, are you willing to go from the horse and buggy to the car? You know,
I love that quote that you either have to disrupt or you have to prepare to be disrupted. I mean, that is such a true statement.
Well, you know what? The thing about that is, like, you know, the internet is, you know, this expansion is only like really one decade old. So it's in its infancy to begin with, you know, and it's just like, you know, just me because I'm an American, you know, we usually come up with these ideas and the other countries redefine them and improve on them, which is a natural thing. That's why, you know, I'm thinking, you know, it's like, you know, like Zuckerberg from Facebook, the owner, you know, like he made a great point. He goes, you know, we are so spoiled as a country and you're watching this video of me right now. He goes, you know, 2/3 of the world doesn't even have the internet, you know?
Yeah.
And if I gave them a phone, they wouldn't even know how to use it. I don't know. But Cyrus has got a really cool story, you know, and I want, you know, him to read this because, you know what, I read this. And it's actually pretty cool. I'll tell you a little bit about it here after Cyrus gives his report.
So 1,000 white women, you know, Charlie listened to this book and then, you know, I listened to it as well. And, you know, it's an amazing story. There's the Cheyenne, you know, and the American government, you know, President Grant, you know, they're talking about, you know, how can they integrate the two cultures? And the Cheyenne proposed that they'll give the U.S. government 1,000 horses in exchange for 1,000 women that they would, you know, want to marry, you know, and have children with to help assimilate them into American culture. And of course, you know, at the beginning of the book, it's this huge outrage. People are just scandal. Then in the back room, they're like, well, maybe this deal could work out. And that's where this story begins. And, you know, it's not the notebooks, and it's not, you know, all nonfiction like I had originally believed. It is fiction. You know, Jim Fergus does a great job, you know, illuminating these characters because, yeah, the detail, you know, and the stories and the struggles that they go through, you know, is so lifelike. You feel like you're there on a train ride, you know, going out to meet the Cheyenne or something and beyond. So yeah, a great, great book, you know, beautiful novel. And it really just helps to bring this whole story, you know, into the modern world of, you know, white, Caucasian, European culture, you know, inflicting itself onto an altruistic people that thrive for the greater good, you know, and that conflict that still exists today because, you know, the Native Americans are still here. and that's a good thing.
I actually read the book before I listened to it, right? Because, you know, they sent me the manuscript, and, you know, and then I'm like, you know, why are you sending this to me? You know, because, you know, I got it and came from when we got audio going. And so I got it from London, right? You know, the name of it is 1,000 White Women, right? So I'm, you know, you'd imagine where your head goes, right? You know, oh, well, hey, what's this about? You know, you know,
some harem right, somewhere,
yeah. Right? And then, you know, I started reading the book, you know, and in the book is like, it's based in fact,
historical fiction, right?
Historical fiction. There actually was this woman, and there actually was journals that she had left. Now, but the author goes on and he embellishes it to make a really great story out of it. It's one of the best books I have read by far in the last 5 years. And it just because, like Sarah says, how many times have you read a book where you feel like you're in it? Like, you know, like you were on the same trip, you know? And it was just that good. And it opened up, you know, your perceptions to all these different things that we all have, but we very rarely think about, because it happens in the 1800s, and it takes you back to when you know you didn't just turn on the faucet and the water came running, and you weren't arguing over whether Netflix was going to show ads or not, you know. And that's your art and entertainment news.
Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Let me dirty up your mind. I'll strip away your heart veneer and see what I can find.
Billy David's band, the Billy David Band, just released a powerful album called Magic that features the best rock and reggae musicians performing today. He sits down with the president of Just Imagine Inc., Charlie Stanton, in this interview.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we are really honored, privileged. We've been trying to get him on for a long time. It's Billy David from the Billy David Band. Billy's down in San Diego speaking with us, and it is so cool to have you on. Welcome, Billy.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about some of your music. You know, you have, you know, Magic out now, and, you know, it's really just beautiful. As a matter of fact, let's listen to a little bit of it right now. And that is what I'm talking about. You know, if I could write and sing and perform like that, man, you know, I would, you know, I'd be on cloud nine, man.
Gee, thanks, brother. That's really nice thing to say.
Where are you? Is it just something inside of you that just comes out, you know, or is it something that you have to work at?
Big Mountain, you know, Big Mountain's the one that brought me here. But, you know, they had that hit, Baby, I Love Your Way, number one worldwide tune. And, you know, I met them down in the Keys.
Uh-huh.
And from being out at the sea, you know, I ended up down in the Keys and, you know, met a nice little lady down there and started a little family, you know what I mean? And Big Mountain came through and was building a recording studio and needed a carpenter, you know? And at the time, I was a state licensed drywall contractor and a carpenter down in Key West, and I was just having a good time living life, just wearing shorts, you know what I mean?
I do.
Down there, man, I loved it, you know? And he's like, well, why don't you come out to San Diego and build my recording studio? And I was like, Leaky West? Well, you know, the hurricanes are so bad, and once you get a child and you live down there, and, you know, you want a good education and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, let's do it. That guy might have been out here since, you know, and we've done a lot of big things since I've been out here, you know. I've built a lot of recording studios.
You know, I love the Keys.
Only after I met my wife that I ended up. I lived on Little Fork. That's why I became an apiculturist. I learned about bees. I used to have all the bees in the Florida Keys. The wholesale end of it, the retail end of it. It was just huge business. I just got into it, man. I just fell in love with it. I started in the back of the truck, you know, with bees all over his head, all around, not getting stung. And I'm like, what's up? I gotta know what's up. You know what I mean? And just fell in love with him. He handed me one book, and I'd finish it, and he'd be like, all right, now you ready for this one? Oh, yeah, man, what a great. I'll get back into it one day, man. I really will, you know?
You know, I'm sure you will. You know, I wanted to ask you about Lovin' Revolution. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I mean, for me, it's just like, gosh, I'm not seeing all this revolting and revolutions and everything being very fruitful around the world. You know what I mean? With them being armed and people hurting each other, just don't really make much sense. And meanwhile, what are all the kids and women and old people doing? You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's really about something we can all be involved with. I mean, this war business is just, for man, I'll be happy one day when women, and I mean every day, women, you know, turn around and grab this world back from man and say, hey, sit down. Dinner's not ready yet.
I love it.
Like mom does, because that's really what I think our world needs and how it's supposed to look, Mother Earth, you know, and I think it's, you know, it's really only functions properly when a motherly matron. And when I hear them talk about, oh, it's going to be a revolution, and we're going to back this one and back that one, and yeah, it just don't seem fruitful, no matter how you look at it, you know, and it's all so twisted up, because you never know who's right and wrong, and what politics is this and that. It just don't even make sense to choose sides when they want it to be so bad, you know, because it's just kind of corrupt, you know, all of it from a long time back. So for me, a loving revolution is just something that I know is pure. You know, if you know, it's just about loving, then it's okay, because you know, you see the innocent of children, like you're talking. I mean, your daughter, like, safe. She'll set the world straight real quick. You know? Yeah. She loves him, and she'll hold his hand and make sure he's safe and appreciate what he's doing for her, too. But, hey, you know what I mean? And that's the real, you know what I mean? Because that's love right there, you know what I mean? And what we do with it is up to us after that. But there's no reason why, you know what I mean, we can't all share in it, because it's the only real thing that's going to work with the rest of stuff is just really garbage. It's not fruitful. It's not, you know, when you're going to that purity of just love, people just, I mean, you got to admit, it's like the perfect geometry when there's four geometries, you know what I mean? Or what have you in the world. It's something that can't be questioned, you know what I mean?
For all of our listeners out there, let's hear a little bit of a Love and Revolution.
You're making your way and I'm making mine. We'll live together and be just fine. I'll send songs and some dinners. We're living all together. It's a loving revolution. It's time we had a revolution. It's a loving revolution. It's time we changed the destitution. It's a loving revolution.
Well, I think we can see what everybody, you know, gets out of it, and you know what you know are trying to get across. It's such a cool song. And where can people find your music, Billy?
You know, right now you can find all their existing first three albums on iTunes, Beady Baby. I think I'm just going to be saving to thumb drive, and I think I'm going to be letting it off myself. I think I'm going to step away from some of this stuff that, you know, the iTunes and the CD Babies and the Spotify's and all them. I think I'm going to take it back to where it used to be, because these thumb drives are going to be, you know, putting them in grocery stores and gas stations all across America, you know. So I kind of got a little secret thing I'm working on, you know, with manufacturing and put my music on thumb drives and trying to get it back in the mainstream in the stores when we don't have music stores anymore. You know, we'll see how it goes. It's not going to be an easy endeavor, but it's starting out really great. So right now, my existing stuff's going to be all found, you know, like everyone else's, but I think I want to change that, you know what I mean?
I look forward to that. You know, maybe, you know, it's times like this, you know, when people come up with different ideas, when things are changing. Well, I think it's a great idea, and I think it will catch on, you know.
I think if it can be a little greener, because now, you know, every time I sell a thumb drive, I'll be selling some music, so it'll be nice to have a little income from music so that I can put music among back toward music. And that's the way it's supposed to work in order for music to keep getting progressively better. You know, I when people ask me, well, what kind of reggae do you do? And stuff, you know, I'm like, well, you know, I'm a little dreadlock boy from Alabama. So I kind of just do what I feel, but I kind of follow, you know, Bob was a big theater, and of course, you know, Bunny Wailer is a friend of mine, you know. Andy Fox is, of course, a friend of mine. And it's like, you know, where would reggae music be if Bob would have just been able to stay at it, dance all wouldn't have got in the way, kind of, you know, and taking a lot of the time that it did and reggae set back. Where would it be if Bob would have stayed at it all that time today in 2015?
So you've got to be influenced by other people's sound, you know?
Well, obviously, but, you know.
Wow.
The other direction, you know what I mean? You know, because you hear a lot of artists, and I love the things that Yellow Man does, where he'll be doing his own thing, but then he'll break into one of them old 70s classics or what have you. And that's cool, and that's cool for Yellow Man. But for me and the reggae that I want to make, it has to not be that same Bob Marley rhythm. You're not going to catch me using one of Bob Marley's old rhythm. No way. I'll take my old rock song, my songs that I write that might sound rock, and I'll give it to a genuine, hardcore, you know, reggae player, you know, like Dez, and get authentic reggae and a new, brand new reggae rhythm that I can bring to the reggae world. So that's actually one of the biggest thrills for me, because like when this new song I'm doing with Yellow Man called The Reggae Party, when I sent it to Jamaica for King Yellow Man to voice on, the first thing I heard back from him was, dude, everybody loves, well, he's more Rosh. I'm more dude. You know, everybody in the studio loves that rhythm. Who made that rhythm? I was like, it's my rhythm, you know, me and Evan, our little production team we have, you know, and Paul Castickson has been involved, you know, our team. You know, your teams change according to what you're working on, you know. And right now, you know, I've been fortunate. My first drummer is still the drummer for Slightly Stupid, you know. And they put 15 to 30,000 people in a place. That's Snoop Open Forum and Cypress Hill, you know. So I know my second album, I had Wade from Unwritten Law. He did a few little things on there. But mainly it was, you know, Carlton Santa Davis, you know, Bob Marley's original drummer, Ziggy Marley's drummer today. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Billy, I got to tell you, it's been so great having you on, man. And we want everyone to go out there and purchase your albums and listen to your music. And, of course, we're going to feature you on Just Imagine Inc. as a featured artist. And we'll have all the links and all your videos up there for everyone to see. You know, thank you so much, you know, and it is true. We have been trying to get you on for a long time, and you're just a busy guy.
I'm glad we made it happen, man, because I really enjoy our conversations.
To learn more about Billy David and the Billy David Band, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Come a little bit closer, hear what I have to say. Just like children sleeping, we could dream this night away.
I had the distinct pleasure of shaking hands with Joanne Shenandoah at the 15th Annual Native American Music Awards on the Allegheny Reservation in New York State. She talks to the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton, in this interview.
Hey, welcome everybody to a really, really cool interview with Joanne Shenandoah, and she is talking to us from New York. We want to ask you, you know, about what you've been doing, and I understand that you got some new projects going on. You always have projects going on, and we just want to say, you know, we're so happy. Thank you, Joanne, and welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me back on the show. It's just a delight. I'm honored to talk to you again.
Oh, thank you. Our producer got to meet you.
Yeah. Yeah, so of course. I mean, I'm very pleased that I get a chance to travel the world and meet so many amazing people. And I love what you guys do because you just bring awareness. And that's important. Everybody needs to have someone who makes them aware of certain things that are happening around the planet. And, you know, I'm one of those people who have just always been inspired and excited about those who go out and try to spread the word about good things. So this is all good.
Yeah, you know what? Thank you so much for saying that. That's what we try to do, you know, and we have on people like yourself and, you know, if you've got a positive message and, you know, and we want to get it out there to all of our listeners and things like that and make it interesting and fun. In the meantime, it helps everyone too, you know, because it gives everybody a fresh, different perspective, you know, of what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. And also just think about things potentially with an open mind, because we have a lot to learn from one another. I was just sitting across the table just now, these two young Mohawk men who were talking about environmental issues around the globe and how important it is that we keep an open mind and learn from one another and, you know, not be jaded so much by all the negativity, because there's so much of that. It's just, it's rampant. And in a world where we're looking at people virtually doing themselves in, we have to think about the future and what we do with that. And so that is exactly what I was just doing.
Well, you know, I really like the project, the campaign you guys had, the World Forgiveness Project. You know, I love that.
Wasn't that beautiful?
Yes.
So exciting with Peter Gabriel and so many wonderful artists. It's just really terrific.
You know what? He just keeps coming up. We just talked to Ricky Cash, and he and Wouter Kellerman from South Africa, they made this album, Winds of Zanzibar, and it won the Grammy this year. And
Anyway,
when I was talking to him after they won the Grammy, and then he brings up, I asked him what he's working on next, and then he's working on this new album, and he goes, we're working on this new album, and they're doing like a peace initiative thing for, you know, for everyone around the world, not just in India. And he said, you know, he has Peter Gabriel on it with him. And I was like, man, this guy.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, and then you bring him up. And I'm like, man, this guy's really getting around, you know.
Oh, no, that's pretty cool. Because, you know, I think the more conscious we become of ourselves and the environment, the more that we will understand our role and responsibility on the earth. Well, I mean, for me, you know, this past year I had to take a kind of a hiatus on my music, even though over New Year's we did record with a wonderful hang drum player named Daniel Waples, who has several million hits on YouTube. He's phenomenal. And it sounds to me like kind of percussion, a harp, and a xylophone all at the same time.
Wow.
And so gorgeous. So I have a song I want to send you via email, if that's okay. It's a song I was inspired to write with a friend of mine for Mary Magdalene. And it's a beautiful song. And it's actually a song that I sang for a gay wedding in Philadelphia.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is like, it's one of the most beautiful love songs. I think it's probably maybe the next best wedding song. I'm not sure, but anyway, I'll email it to you, and I'd love for you to hear it. But, you know, when people have a passion to do what they do, you just know it, and it resonates for miles and miles and hundreds of thousands of miles. You know that you are helping to lift souls and to make change in the world, and all that is just a blessing to me.
Well, you know, it's a beautiful thing, and I can't wait to hear the song. What's the name of the song?
It's called Chosen One.
Chosen One. Okay. And I can't wait to hear it.
I waited a long, long time. You opened my heart and mind. And now our flame is one. You are my chosen one. You are my chosen one.
I want to get back to a little something else too, is that,
yeah.
When we were talking about, you know, all kinds of things, you know, with the environment, with your destiny and this and that. And when you brought up the question about what you want people to remember you by, right? Everyone does something in their life that affects somebody else centuries down the road, you know, and they think about it and then brings a smile to their face and it gives them some sort of encouragement.
Well, it's clearly obvious when you know that people love what they're doing. And why not? Why can't we all enjoy life as opposed to, like, man, I can't wait till I retire at 65 or 70. You know, I'm like, what? Are you kidding? Oh, dear. I've actually been responsible for telling people in certain jobs when they're just being flat out miserable, you know, maybe you should start doing something that you really love. That's what I say to them. And those are not harsh words. Those are kind, heartfelt words. And they just look at me like, ah, wow, you know.
That gets back to a lot of conditionings. A lot of people, you know, let their work become their identity instead of, you know, their identity, you know, making their work.
Yeah, it's shocking fact, I think, nationwide, even understanding all the work that I did this past year, to realize there are many very unhappy people doing things that they don't want to do. So isn't it time to, as in the prophecy song that I have on one of my recordings called Arunda, which means the soul, to awaken, stand up, be counted, and we are being recognized in the spirit world. We are responsible for ourselves, for our families, for our nation. And to just take that to heart and to say, okay, here we are in this earth.
Well, you know, let me ask you a question about that, because you know, I was raised Catholic, but very interested, you know, in the natives of spiritual world, you know? So
I am so amazed that we were actually able to go and sing at the Vatican when we were asked to do the canonization of the first Native saint, Gabrielita de Cuita, is her name. While I'm not Catholic, many traditional people were very upset about that. And I said, well, wait a minute. Our music is about peace. Our music is about bringing people together. It's about healing. And this is what needs to take place. So I'm going to celebrate.
How was your experience there? How'd you like it?
How was the acoustics?
Well, I'm sure the acoustics. I'm sure the acoustics were fine, but I mean, you know, did you feel out of place, or were you glad you went?
Very happy that I went, for sure. Very happy. Yeah, definitely. You know, and as far as what you're talking about, there comes a point, I think, where we, as a human race, need to understand ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Because ritual is very important. It's like, okay, you wake up in the morning, right?
Right.
What is your first move? Do you make coffee? Do you smoke a cigarette? Which is one of our sacred tobacco. You know, it's a sacred tobacco, which all words go straight to the Creator. You know, so there are these things, as far as Native people go, that really are connected to the earth. So I think a lot of folks, while they're mesmerized by it, and of course, in Europe, they totally love natives and are very open and want to learn more. There comes the point where you say, okay, so let's create ritual with each other. Let's spend time. Let's figure out how we can go about moving upon the earth to live in harmony and balance with each other and the natural world at the same time, so that we have a place that our children can continue to grow, thrive, learn. They'll have clean air, clean water, good food. Make a better world, and that's what I hope I do for my music.
Well, let's speak of your music. Let's speak about the Best World Recording Native American Music Awards in 2014, Nature Dance.
Isn't that cool?
Oh, definitely, and, you know, it's always, Joanne, I gotta tell you, it's always such a pleasure. I look forward to it every time we speak.
Well, beautiful. Well, thank you, and many blessings to you and your family, and how exciting.
Okay. Yeah, they're gonna have another kid here soon, so.
To learn more about Joanne Shenandoah, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
You're gonna come to me. Choose carefully, 'cause I'm capable of anything, of anything and everything. Make me your Aphrodite, make me your one and only. Don't make me your enemy, your enemy, your enemy. So you wanna play with magic.
Paper Towns, a New York Times bestseller, a 2009 Audi Award winner. Quentin Jacobson has spent a lifetime loving the magnificently adventurous Margot Roth Spiegelman from afar. So when she cracks open a window and climbs back into his life, dressed like a ninja and summoning him for an ingenious campaign of revenge, he follows. After their all-nighter ends and a new day breaks, Q arrives at school to discover that Margot, always an enigma, has now become a mystery. But Q soon learns that there are clues, and therefore him. Urged down a disconnected path, the closer he gets, the less Q sees of the girl he thought he knew. Prince medalist John Green returns with the brilliant wit and searing emotional honesty that have inspired a new generation of listeners.
The way I figure it, everyone gets a miracle. My miracle was I wound up living across the street from Margot Roth Spiegelman. She was inarguably the most gorgeous creature that God had ever created. Margot's life was a series of unbelievably epic adventures.
Are you going to spend the rest of high school pining for this girl?
As senior year drew to a close, Margot and I were practically strangers. Until this one night.
What the?
Margot?
I need to borrow your car.
What?
I have 9 things I need to do tonight.
Can't you just get your boyfriend to do it?
Ex-boyfriend.
We were driving down a blessedly empty I-4, and I was following Margot's directions. The clock on the dashboard said it was 1:07. It's pretty, huh? She said. She was turned away from me, staring out the window, so I could hardly see her. I love driving fast under streetlights. Light, I said. The visible reminder of invisible light. That's beautiful, she said. T.S. Eliot, I said. You read it too, in English last year. I hadn't actually ever read the whole poem that line was from, but a couple of the parts I did read got stuck in my head. Oh, it's a quote, she said, a little disappointed. I saw her hand on the center console. I could have put my own hand on the center console, and then our hands would have been in the same place at the same time. But I didn't. Say it again, she said. Light, the visible reminder of invisible light. Yeah, damn, that's good. That must help with your lady friend. Ex-lady friend, I corrected her. Susie dumped you? Margot asked. How do you know she dumped me? Oh, sorry. Although she did, I admitted, and Margot laughed. The breakup had happened months ago, but I didn't blame Margot for failing to pay attention to the world of lower caste romance. What happens in the band room stays in the band room. Margot put her feet up on the dashboard and wiggled her toes to the cadence of her speaking. She always talked like that, with this discernible rhythm like she was reciting poetry. Right, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I can relate. My lovely boyfriend of lo these many months is my best friend. I looked over, but her hair was all in her face, so I couldn't make out if she was kidding. Seriously? She didn't say anything. But you were just laughing with him this morning. I saw you. I don't know what you're talking about. I heard about it before first period, and then I found them both talking together, and I started screaming bloody murder, and Becca ran into the arms of Clint Bauer, and Jace was just standing there like a dumbass with the chaw drool running out of his stank mouth. I had clearly misinterpreted the scene in the hallway.
Green is not only clever and wonderfully witty, but also deeply thoughtful and insightful. In addition, he's a superb stylist, with a voice perfectly matched to his amusing, illuminating material, says Booklist in a starred review. John Green is an award-winning New York Times bestselling author whose many accolades include the Prinz Medal, the Prince Honor, and the Edgar Award. He has twice been a finalist for the Los Angeles Times Book Prize. With his brother Hank, he is one half of the Vlogbrothers, one of the most popular online video projects in the world. He lives with his wife and family in Indianapolis, Indiana. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Thank you.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you'd like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
Hi, I'm Sean Mark Nipper.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.